Yeah, there are definitely moral movements in Europe. They're not so much religiously driven, but for example, no country in the European Union, no country in Europe can have the death penalty. They consider it barbaric. You can't be a member of the European Union if you have the death penalty. And it's one of their big complaints against Americans that we do this. In fact, they think we're executing thousands of people a year because every time we do, we execute 85 to 100 people a year in this country. Every time we do it, it makes huge headlines in the European papers and all of them. So they think it happens all the time here. Another place where the morality shows up, interestingly, is in their attitudes towards drug use. Almost all the European countries have decriminalized drug use. They don't think it should be treated as a crime, it should be treated as a health problem, as a social problem, and that's how they treat it. And they make this argument on moral grounds. If you send these people to prison, they're going to use more drugs. We're failing them. So as a moral, we have a moral obligation to cure them, not to treat them as criminals. That too, even though they don't have the religious basis, they definitely have a political movements driven by moral imperatives.
You write in your book that in Belgium and the Netherlands, there's full legal recognition of gay marriage, and most other European countries have authorized civil ceremonies for gay and lesbian couples. But in the United States, President Bush has been supporting a constitutional amendment that would outlaw gay marriage. It's a really big cultural difference. Do you have a sense of what they make in England of the political anti-gay rights movement in the United States?
As I said, I think they're quite cynical about the notion of bringing perceived religious beliefs into the political world. It's just not thinkable that Tony Blair would ever stand up at the end of a speech and say, "God bless Britain." It just couldn't happen. They'd laugh him off the stage if he did. And so I think they generally see this as a political ploy, not so much as some kind of morally driven imperative on the president's part. They see this as an appeal to the Christian right. I think they're very pleased that they no longer have religiously oriented political parties. As I say, religion doesn't matter much in European countries. An interesting sidelight of people not going to churches, they don't get married anymore either. I don't know if you know this, but if you look at the European rates of unmarried motherhood, they're the highest in the world. This is not because they have single mothers. It's that the mom and dad are living there with the kids. They just never bothered to get married because in many European countries, people don't get married anymore. Most of them now have some kind of legal civil union system. It wasn't created to accommodate gay marriages. It was created for ordinary heterosexual couples, but gay couples can take advantage of the same law.
My guest is T.R. Reid of The Washington Post. His new book is called The United States of Europe. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is T.R. Reid, and he's currently the Rocky Mountain Bureau Chief of The Washington Post. He's the former London Bureau Chief, and his new book is about the European Union. It's called The United States of Europe, The New Superpower, and the End of American Supremacy. After France opposed the U.S. at the UN right before we went into Iraq, this whole movement started in the United States of just like mocking the French. So you didn't call them French fries. If you felt this way, you call them freedom fries. And, you know, people were boycotting French cheeses and French wines. And if you call somebody French or say that they have like French blood, that was in some circles like a terrible insult.
Yeah, you remember John Kerry looks like a Frenchman? You remember
precisely.
That terrible slur?
Precisely.
Yeah.
So, what do you? I don't know when the last time you were in France was, but do you have any sense of what the people in France are making of all of this?
There are two things about this. In the first place, they're mad about us for dumping on France. You know, a lot of the world opposed the Iraq War. They don't think it's fair for us to stick it just to France. And the other thing, I don't think it's an insult to them to stop calling French fries, because they think the greasy, big, fat potato that's sold in America is nothing they would ever touch anyway. I don't know if you've ever had frites from a friterie on the street in Paris, but they're really good. They're crisp and fresh, and they're nothing like American French fries. So it's almost an insult to the French to call what we call a French fry as far as they're concerned. I'll tell you the most interesting thing was the columnist from Le Monde, Mark Roche, a very smart guy, a good friend of mine. I asked him, does it bother you that Americans won't buy French wine anymore? And here's what he said. He said, if Americans are stupid enough to give up wonderful wines and delicious cheese, that's their problem. In France, we know that such delights make life worth living. But I think what they understand is, particularly in Britain, it was very politically useful for Tony Blair to blame the French, because you can always get the Brits fired up about the frogs.
How do you think the American presidential race is being seen across Europe?